Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host, Shane Bacon, of course. A very fun one for you today. If you missed it, had Curtis Strange on Monday to kind of recap all the craziness that did go down at the U.S. Open. Obviously, Dustin Johnson winning. What happened with Dustin on the fifth green, the penalty that was or wasn't or was and maybe was that ended up being something. But I've got somebody on the podcast that was in the final group on Sunday at Oakmont. Andrew Landry, the surprise story from the U.S. Open, is joining me in just a couple of minutes. Ranked 624th in the world. He came into Oakmont. He opened with a historic, never-seen-before 66, and never really faltered all week. Landed in the final group on Sunday thanks to these incredible birdies on 17 and 18 into the third round. He eventually finished tied for 15th. You know, we talked about the experience, which players reached out to him in support of the way he played all week, the Dustin Johnson penalty and how he was told about it, and the moment that he won't soon forget from this U.S. Open. If you want to get in touch with us, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Shane Bacon. The Clubhouse is at The Clubhouse Pod. You can use the hashtag ClubhouseSB. You can also email the show, theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, do us a huge favor. Go write a review on iTunes. It really helps out a lot. I would really appreciate it. I'll give you a high five next time I see you if you do it. And really, you know, that's enough of me. I mean, we recapped it. So if you haven't heard that one, go back, listen. Me and Curtis Strange went over everything. But this is Andrew Landry time, the breakout star of this U.S. Open. And happy to welcome in a familiar face if you're watching any of the Fox coverage of the U.S. Open this past weekend. Andrew Landry is in here, 28-year-old pro, won on the web.com tour last year, finished tied for 15th at Oakmont on Sunday. And before we get going, I ask every guest this, and I have to ask you, I know it is early, what have you had to eat today?
Nothing yet. We actually just called in some Mati's Mexican food, and we're about to grub down on some Mexican food.
Are you back home now?
I am. We got back home last night around midnight or so, and came straight in, got some good rest, and you know, slept in a little bit, and went and picked the dog up this morning from the vet, and back to normal life.
Yeah, I mean, it must be so strange, you know. I mean, you go to something that, you know, you hope to have success at, obviously, but you never know. And I mean, you know, golf is a strange sport. And then this 7 days happens and you have to go back and you're back to your bed, back, like you said, you pick the dog up, you're running errands. Have you had a chance to kind of just sit and reflect on the last week of your life?
I did. You know, I laid in bed last night. Obviously, I was pretty tired. I laid in bed and just, you know, thought to myself, you know, how fortunate I was to be in that situation. As always, you know, every player is like that, and every player is fortunate. And you know, I'm very blessed, and just to be in the situation is unbelievable to me. And you know, I'm hoping to get back in that situation here soon. You know, next 4 weeks, and starting out in Reno next week. So. I'm just fortunate, you know, just fortunate enough to be in that situation, and I'm just very blessed.
Yeah, I mean, before we dive into the actual U.S. Open week and the 4 days of you playing, you know, the quote in the story that was kind of circulating is, before you got to Oakmont, you called your dad and said, I think I can win this championship. I mean, is that story accurate, and what kind of spurred that on?
You know, I'm just... I've always thought my game was set up for a U.S. Open style course, and I just think telling myself that over the last 15 years of playing golf, you know, competitively, actually it's probably been longer than that, closer to 20 years competitive golf, and just telling yourself that, and then, you know, once you kind of get in the situation, I feel like mentally you're already prepared. And And like I said, I had no expectations for the week. You know, I didn't have the greatest season going in there, and I was definitely an underdog. So I had no expectations. You know, I wasn't put on the spot like Dustin Johnson was. You know, after that kind of bad thing that happened to him last year. You know, thankfully he came around and got himself a win. You know, I played with him, and it was unbelievable play, but. Yeah, I just think that I just think that I was prepared. I was prepared. That's why I was never nervous throughout the week. I seemed so calm and, you know, very collected. And I just think that I was there. I was mentally prepared. I was physically prepared. My game was sharp. You know, and every player thinks that they can win every single week. And every player doesn't show up to a tournament knowing that they can't win. And, you know, obviously we're playing up against the best players in the world. And there's a lot of great players out there that get overshadowed, and they'll never even, you know, people never even know who they are. And, you know, I was just very fortunate enough for you guys and Golf Channel and XM Radio and everyone that has promoted me and, you know, helped me, you know, get a name out for myself. And, you know, I really appreciate that. And it's been just a great, great little ride, you know, over the last week. It's been fun.
Hey, you played with Dustin on Saturday, correct?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've played with him in college. I think I heard you say you'd played with him in college, and you said you didn't know if he actually remembered playing with you, but you remember playing with him. You know, he's number at the time number six in the world. He's a big old guy that bombs it. I mean, you hit it pretty far yourself. I mean, this guy, you know, gets it out there. Do you block that out? I mean, mentally, I find it amazing. I tried to play pro golf for a while, and I mean, I find it amazing that you can be in a situation, the biggest stage really in American golf, and you're not rattled, you're not nervous, you're playing with a guy that you watch on TV if you're not in the event that week. And how do you block that? How can you keep that out of your mind and just focus on your own game?
I just think that it's because I just have so much self-belief in my game. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to be 6'4" and hit it, fly at 340 and, you know, have a great wedge game and do all the things that Dustin Johnson does. I mean, that guy's an unbelievable specimen and player. Unbelievable. Like, the guy is crazy. I truly believe that he is one of the best players in the world, and obviously it shows. But, you know, I've always kind of looked at Dustin Johnson and just always loved his game. But yeah, I mean, all games are different. I mean, you look at Steve Stricker to Zach Johnson, and, you know, Zach Johnson was kind of my hero whenever, I've always loved his game, because I feel like we're kind of similar. We wedge it good and we drive it good and we putt good. So, yeah, it's just, you know, my game plan for the week was to hit as many fairways as possible. And, you know, when I had scoring clubs in my hand, let's go at the pins and let's try to make birdies. And other than that, let's try to hit the green and make pars. That was my strategy for the week. And, you know, it obviously worked really well. And the pin locations on that last nine or last 18 holes were unbelievably hard. So, you had to be spot on, and DJ played an unbelievable round. So, yeah, I just think that my game plan, you know, everybody has their own game plan, whether you hit it 280 or 350. So I just think that blocking that out was very key. There was a couple times on par fives where I just didn't even watch him tee off. I knew that he was going to hit it on a line where I was never even going to come close to hitting it.
So you just turn the other way. Keep, I don't want to see it, Dustin. You do your own thing.
That's right. Keep your head down, and I'm just going to go a different route here.
so let's go back. I mean, I want to start initially with your opening round, obviously a historic opening round. Nobody's ever shot 66 in a U.S. Open at Oakmont to open the championship. You had to come hit a putt Friday morning, cold turkey as it gets. I mean, you played pretty much the entire round of golf, and now you got to come out here and hit a, what, 12-footer or something, 8-footer for birdie to shoot 66. Be honest with me. How many times did you hit that putt in your mind before actually physically stroking that putt that you ended up making?
You know, I never even really thought. I mean, I looked at the putt, obviously. I looked at the putt before I left, got a good visual of what it's going to do to where I can, you know, hit that putt in the morning on the practice green. And, you know, I probably hit maybe 50-something putts, I guess, from that range to really get the good, like, really get good speed on it. I went to the range. I went to just that putting green on nine, which is great because you know, it's the exact same speed as the green on nine. So it's that's definitely helpful. And, you know, I got to get out there and look at it and, you know, just kind of visualize that putt going in. And, you know, I got off to a good start with my practice and made a bunch of them, and then kind of slowed down and didn't really make much. And I just kind of backed off of it, and, you know, cause I didn't want to hit a bunch of putts and not see them go in. So I was just kind of visualizing, you know, all the putts that went in over the last 17 holes of the previous day, and just visualized what that putt should do. And, you know, I hit a great putt and went right in the middle.
Did you have any idea that that was, again, that was for some record that had never been done? Did you have an idea that 66 was a number that had never opened in an Oakmont U.S. Open?
I did not. No, I had no idea.
Probably good then. That's probably a good thing.
Yeah,
that's nice to know.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was cool though.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the things that really impressed not just me, but I think our broadcasting team with you throughout the week was, you know, you did have some stretches of golf where you didn't play your best, and you kept bouncing back. And I go to the second round, you open the first nine holes, you didn't play very well, and you know, it was kind of fading a little bit, and then you come back with a 32. Did something click there? Did something happen when you made the turn that just all of a sudden you were back to playing?
No, I just think that's Oakmont. That's Oakmont. I mean, you can play good golf and not get rewarded, and you can play bad golf and get rewarded, you know. And I never really felt like I was playing bad at any time besides the front nine on the last round, you know. And I really didn't even think it was that bad. I just think that I hit a couple loose tee shots, and that's what kind of caused everything. And but yeah, I just think that I was staying so patient, because I knew that back nine set up really well for me. There was a lot of birdie opportunities for me. The way the holes laid out, it just really fit my eye really well. Front nine, on the other hand, did not seem to fit my eye that well. You know, that was the nine where I was really trying to make sure I just got it in at even par, and maybe threw in a couple birdies. You know, six, seven, eight, and nine are probably the four hardest holes in golf I've ever played. So it was definitely a hard golf course.
Yeah. Are you a leaderboard watcher? I mean, do you look up at the leaderboards and pay attention to where you're at?
I don't, you know, I looked at it a few times, in the rain delay. I looked at it just to kind of see how many shots ahead I was. I knew that I was going to be, you know, leading, cause I think I was like maybe four or five under. So, I looked and I knew I was leading. I wanted to see how many, and it was just cool to be able to, you know, get to witness that and screenshot that and just say, you know, it's pretty cool to just be able to lead the U.S. Open. And, you know, it was fun though. It was an awesome week. Great experience for me. Learned so much, as a player, as a person, through family, you know, just having everybody there. It was just a very special moment.
Did the other players, you know, these are the best in the world. I mean, you've mentioned it, even the Dustins and Shane Lowry's and these guys. Did they start to treat you different, or do you feel anything that they were treating you or saying anything to you different as the week went on and you continued to be near the leaderboard or leading?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Scott Piercy, we played, and I don't know. I just think that he maybe thought that I was a good grinder, and he was definitely very, very supportive of me and told me, you know, when we were walking out of the scoring area after third round, he looked at me and said, "Andrew, you just keep on, whatever happens, happens. You just keep on doing what you're doing, and you're doing a great job." And, you know, coming from a guy like that, you know, he's very well known on the PGA Tour, and, you know, he's one of the top players in the world. And, you know, coming from a guy like that, it means a lot to me, and it's very special. So, you know, I care what people think about me out there, and I try to, you know, be nice to everyone, and whether it's PGA Tour players or fans or volunteers or whatever. I'm nice. I'm a great guy when it comes to that. So I just think that, them kind of expressing, especially Sergio Garcia, that was one of my idols growing up, and him walking up to me whenever, I believe we were getting an interview with Golf Channel, saying, "Great job, Andrew." That means the world to me. So yeah, I mean, they were definitely cheering me on and giving me motivation and to do great things. So it was definitely a cool moment.
Did any player surprise you? Did anybody that maybe you had heard things about or thought things about that had given you support or done something positive your way? Did any of that happen throughout the week or a text message maybe from somebody that you didn't really know?
No. Everybody was just really nice. I didn't really get any famous people text messages or anything like that. But everything was great. Got to meet Jack Nicklaus. That was pretty awesome walking off the 18th green. Obviously that, getting to meet him, one of the greatest of all times. That was pretty special moment, to cap the week off.
Yeah. Have you ever done anything in your career that was as clutch as those birdies on 17 and 18 on Saturday to get in the final group?
Sure. Absolutely. Win last year in Cartagena, missed two greens, I hit two greens on the back nine of my final round and shot one under par, to win by five and just grinding it out. I just never give up and golf, there's going to be great things happen to you and there's going to be bad things happen to you. And you just got to take the good with the bad and just move on and learn from everything. And so, I feel like I've done greater things, but that's definitely the two that have struck out this year. Those two birdies there to get me into the final group. It was fun. That was awesome.
Yeah, and with the delays, there was obviously a ton of downtime. I mean, there were times where you probably didn't play much golf an entire day. What were you doing to kind of occupy your time and keep your mind off of the actual championship so you didn't have to think about it over and over and over again?
I just really kind of stuck around with my fiance, and she kept me really calm throughout the week. By just explaining to me that, God has this plan, and whether it you be winning or you finishing dead last or missing the cut, he has this plan drawn up in his head or drawn up for you already. And, you just got to accept it, whether it's a win, a 15th, a dead last, or a missed cut. I think that was the big thing that just really kind of helped me just move forward, because the off time of the golf tournament, whenever I was at home and eating dinner and stuff like that, that's when the nerves kicked into me. I never ever had nerves whenever I got to the golf course and first tee to warming up to 18th hole to whatever. I never had nerves, but it was the nerves off the golf course that got me. I'll guarantee you I lost probably 10 pounds.
Well,
I couldn't eat.
That's funny you say that. Yeah. I wanted to play a quick soundbite from Paul Azinger's podcast I had. He was on the show prior to the U.S. Open, and I wanted to play this for you and just get your thoughts on what he's had to say about nerves.
I was thinking about nervous, how nerves work in golf, and I wasn't a big eater when I played and I got myself in contention. And it's funny, I almost want to say this on air, and maybe I will, but it just hit me like a ton of bricks. The nerves and the anxiety before you play can affect your taste buds, because, food didn't taste good if I had a chance to win a tournament. And if it can affect your taste buds, what do you think it's doing to the rest of you?
So you're at home thinking about all this, and so when you get to the golf course, it kind of switches off?
It switches off, and it's crazy. I was able to... I was able to eat at the golf course, but whenever I was at the hotel or going to dinner, there were a couple times where I took one bite of a sandwich or one bite of my meal and just, pushed it aside, and I couldn't do it. So Yeah, that's crazy. I've never heard anybody else, you know, have that, and that's cool that Azinger had that. But yeah, it was definitely a different kind of nerve that I've gotten over the last, you know, 20 years or so. So I've never had that happen to me.
Yeah, and on Sunday you mentioned the front nine not going the way you wanted. I think you were 8 over through 10 holes. Did you still feel like you had a chance? And if you didn't, how were you able to focus enough to play those last 8 holes even par? Because, you know, sometimes the wheels can go completely off because your end goal isn't, I guess, attainable. And I feel like you were able always to kind of click back in at times and continue on the journey.
For sure. I told my caddy Kevin whenever I was walking down nine, and I said, dude, let's get this thing going. Like, we've got to get this thing going. And I was like, let's go 4 under through in or on the last 10 holes. Let's just get it going. And I've really thought I hit a perfect tee shot on 10 down the right side of the fairway, and you know, I got kind of, I guess maybe an unlucky break. I don't know. It might have even flown in the bunker, but it looked good off the tee, and I hit a great shot. So I was never mad about the bogey on 10. And then, you know, I had opportunities there. Had opportunity on 11. Had an opportunity on 12, 13. I mean, I had opportunities coming in every single hole to make a birdie, and you know, I just didn't make any putts coming in, and that was kind of the game changer. You know, you throw in a couple, you know, you throw in 3 or 4 birdies there, and you do shoot 4 under, then you have a really nice top 5 finish or something like that. So, or, you know, even closer to second,
right?
Whatever. I don't even know what I finished. So,
well, you know, we've all dreamed. I mean, if you're a golfer, you dreamed about being in the position you were in on Sunday. What was different to you about the actual moment than maybe what had gone on in your head over the years? You know, when you're an 8-year-old or a 15-year-old putting on the putting green saying this is for the U.S. Open, what felt different on Sunday than maybe what you thought it might feel like?
Obviously the crowds were huge. That was definitely something different. But I feel like the cool thing that happened to me that I got to experience was being in the final group whenever I was standing on 15 fairway. I was standing on 15 fairway and I looked at Kevin and I just looked around and I was just listening to, you know, the roars for Dustin Johnson, people yelling at me, people yelling at Shane Lowry. And I looked at him and I said, dude, how cool is this experience to be in the final group at the U.S. Open at, you know, on the 15th hole, and these guys are tied up and they're just battling to see who's going to win this golf tournament. And, you know, obviously it didn't really work out too well for Shane Lowry, but he definitely played well. It just had, you know, this maybe like 5-3 putts on his last 18 holes, which he didn't really putt that well. And, you know, it was very unfortunate, but he's still, you know, an unbelievable player. But yeah, it was definitely that was definitely something that I have never really got to experience. You don't really get to experience that, you know, obviously on the web or the PGA Tour, coming down the stretch at a major and getting to watch firsthand, you know, them fight this thing out. So I thought that was definitely the coolest moment of the week.
I did want to ask you a question about the whole USGA ruling with Dustin Johnson on the 5th hole. And I wanted to ask you, what point did the USGA approach you and Shane Lowry and explain to you guys kind of what was going on with DJ?
He explained to us on 12 that Dustin Johnson could possibly have a one-shot penalty assessed to him, and we never heard anything else after that. I, on the other hand, believe they should have reviewed it absolutely, but they also should have given us some kind. I mean, you know, it obviously didn't really apply to me anymore, but if I were to be in that situation, I would want to know, you know, if I was leading the golf tournament and, you know, say he did get a one shot of penalty assessed and I was leading the golf tournament by one, things change on 17, you know, 17 is a drivable par four. Game plans change in the last 3-4 holes of a golf tournament when you are in contention to win, whether you're going to play safe or more aggressive. So, I feel like the USGA could have maybe done a little bit better job of maybe explaining to maybe us or something to get Shane at least in a position where he could say, hey, look, I'm going to play more aggressive or you know, back it off a little bit and play more conservative. So I just think that they could have done a little bit better job. I'm not mad at the situation. I know some of the players are pretty mad about it, but it's kind of hard to get me mad. So,
well, did you sense or feel? I mean, because as you mentioned, Shane Lowry at that point still very much in the championship. Did you sense that he was bothered or it threw him off or confused him? Did you get any of that from him? Did you talk to him about it?
I didn't know. I was really honestly trying to stay out of Shane's way as much as possible. And also, you know, trying to make as many birdies as possible for myself. But, I was trying to kind of stay out of his way and let him just get in that moment, you know, and to feel that moment and try to make something happen. And, you know, obviously I'm sure people are saying that it was probably tough to win a golf tournament whenever I'm 8 over par. And people might not be saying that, but you know, I know from past experience, it's hard to play with a guy that, you know, is few over par or struggling a little bit, on Sunday when you're in the final group. And, you know, momentum's momentum, you know, when you can get things rolling and you're seeing your fellow partner rolling putts in and making birdies and things like that, you definitely get a sense of just this push where you start doing great things. When you see great things, you start doing great things. So, you know, obviously that I don't know if that hurt Shane. I don't know, if my play hurt him. I don't know. I feel like it shouldn't have, because we got put on the clock a little. We got put on the clock early in the round, I believe, like on like 7 or something, and we had to kind of speed it up a little bit. But Shane's kind of a fast player. I don't know if I'm slow or not, but.
maybe you are, maybe you're not. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now maybe you realize it. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem like you were a slow player. I thought you got up there and hit it.
Yeah, I felt like I was pretty quick, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you could go back, kind of like now looking back, if you could go back and change or tweak something from the week, is there anything that comes to mind?
You know, there was. I thought about that on the way home on the plane ride. You know, there was probably two things that I would have changed. My ball was a spike mark on the par 5 4 that my ball was kind of sitting in, and I should have played for it, and also I should have. There was a tee shot. There was another tee shot somewhere. I think it was maybe 5, where I needed to hit 3 wood off that tee, because there was no my game plan was that when we got a right to left into win on 5 the par. Hold on, no, it's 4. I'm sorry. When we got the par 5-4, when we got a par when we got. A right to left went into, I needed to hit 3 wood off that tee. That was my game plan. And, you know, we hit driver and then I hit it in the church pews and, you know, didn't, you know, my putt caused me to make a bogey, but, there was a couple things out there that I would have done a little bit different, but not much. Yeah. first 3 days, I wouldn't have changed a thing.
Right. And do you have a moment or a memory that you think is going to kind of stick with you? Is it meeting Jack? Is it being in the lead in the final group? Is there one kind of moment that is almost burned in your memory right now?
18T on Sunday, U.S. Open, final round, doesn't get any better than that.
There it is. Well, crowds going
just
crazy.
Right down crowds all down the left, all down the right, behind you, behind the green. Looking back after I made that putt for par or whatever, looking back down the fairway, typical U.S. Open, how that everybody kind of comes into the fairway, and that was a very special moment.
And I've used this comparison a couple times now, and I wanted to see what your thoughts were. Jason Gore did a little of what you did back at the 2005 U.S. Open. I don't know if you remember this at all. He was a relatively unknown guy playing the final group at Pinehurst with Retief Goosen on Sunday. He didn't play his best golf, but he went on to get a Battlefield promotion. I think he won two more events after already winning, I think, a Web.com event before. Then he goes on and won a PGA Tour event later in the year. Do you feel like you're going to pull a ton of confidence from this, knowing that you played with the best in the world neck and neck, for 4 days?
Absolutely. I don't feel any different. I feel just as confident as I did before I walked into the U.S. Open. I feel like I can compete out there. I really do. And whether my scores and my finishes, my best finishes on the PGA Tour, whatever, my missed cuts on the PGA Tour, like whatever that is, doesn't really mean anything to me. Obviously I want to be in the top five and win tournaments every single week. But on the other hand, what I'm trying to do every single day is to get better, whether it be mentally, physically, emotionally. That's all I'm trying to do every single day. And if I can look back at the end of the year and say, hey, you know what? I got better this year, then that's a win. Whether I make my card, whether I keep my card or lose my card, or if I have to go back to the web or whatever, if I got better this year, it's a positive. I'm taking it, and I'm going to learn from everything that I did. And, obviously PGA Tour golf courses are a little bit harder to kind of get. And I'm learning all these new courses this year, so that's definitely a change. And but I'm getting better. I'm getting better every single day as a player, as a person. With everything that I do in my life, I try to just get better.
And finally, I just wanted to ask, because we talked about this for a second before interview, but every round when you check your phone after, would the messages increase? Would you have more and more after every round? Facebook, text, calls?
Facebook was kind of going crazy. That was Facebook and Instagram. That was going crazy. I had to get off of it there for a while. Actually phone calls and text messages decreased throughout the week. I have so many friends and family that just understand the game and understand, the importance of it. And they just wanted to leave me alone. And, I appreciate that, just let me be by myself and do my thing. And they kind of decreased though, but I definitely got a lot of messages after the round on Sunday and telling me how great of a job I did and to keep my head up but I'm fine. I'm feeling great. I'm well rested now and ready to get going and get back to work tomorrow and get this thing going and get ready for Reno.
Did you have like a high school teacher or like a third grade teacher or somebody really weird that like sent you a message you haven't heard from in 10 years?
I got a message from like some person in Michigan saying that they're my long lost cousin.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know you.
You said I'm not sure. You said bring me the family tree.
That's right.
That's really funny. So you've got a week off and then you go Reno. What's your next month and a half or so look like?
Reno, Greenbrier, RBC, the Canadian Open, and then one more in there. Not sure what the other one is. Haven't really looked at my schedule. I'm just kind of going week to week right now and just playing. Thankfully that finish there got me in for the rest of the year in the tournament. So I'm definitely thrilled about that, and ready to get out there and play some golf and try to get my card.
Yeah, and one more thing. I just wanted to ask you this, because you have mentioned a couple times you feel like U.S. Open courses set up well for your game. You said a couple times, like, you're not one of those guys that goes out there and goes super low. You've shot 58 on your home course twice. 58. That is insane. Well, I mean, you're obviously able to go super low sometimes, right?
For sure. Absolutely. The course obviously was a very short golf course, but, 58 still 58. You still got to make putts. You still got to hit the shots. I can go low. It was kind of crazy because I just right before I left, I think I shot 63 or 62 at my home. I was 62 at my home golf course at Spanish Oaks, and literally maybe 2 days or a day before that, I left to go to the Open. So I had confidence. I was seeing birdies going in, and played well, real well in Memphis, and just really didn't get a good finish out of it. Had kind of a bad back nine there, and bad back nine there, and so I was right there. I've been right there, and I'm learning a lot from my final rounds, and what I need to do, and I'm just ready to play.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say personally, I appreciate all the time you gave us this week at Fox. You were great. You were very very easy to deal with. You would come over and chat with us whenever we could, whenever we asked you, and I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun watching you. We were all rooting for you. We loved the story. We loved seeing you battle back in some of those rounds and such. So congrats on a great week. We hope to see you there a whole bunch, and I appreciate you taking some time with me.
Hey, thanks, Shane. I really appreciate that, man.
And that'll do it. That's the clubhouse this week. That's Andrew Landry again. He's jumped 300 spots, I think, in the world rankings thanks to his finish. He's got a busy schedule. Really nice, and appreciate him coming on. He was great all week. Again, if you need to get in touch with us, hit us up on Twitter, send me an email, write a review, and we will be back soon.